Intelligent design. How do we get here? In a moment, Dr. Jeffrey Simmons back with us. He was last with me about 7 years ago. His latest work, Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? Think about that when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Dr. Jeffrey Simmons. Dr. Simmons is a 44-year long-term retired internist with past boards in internal medicine and disaster medicine. He has worked as a hospitalist for 15 years and the president of a local medical society, LCMS. He has been a member of FEMA's Regional Advisory Council for Region 10. He has lectured locally, nationally on disaster preparedness, including giving the seminar for NASA's medical clinics. He has been a fellow with the Discovery Institute in Seattle for 12 years. He has lectured on intelligent design all across the Northwest. Jeffrey, welcome back, and I trust you are safe, my friend.
I am. So far, thank you. All hunkered down.
Super. Gosh, you keep writing books.
Yeah, it's my 10th book. Been busy.
You have been. And
thanks for having me back, by the way.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, since I was here, I think what Darwin didn't know we were discussing, and I went into like 11 printings. Still selling.
Fantastic.
And I lectured in Spain, and I lectured in Israel, and a whole ton of places, and it was translated into Spanish. It's done quite well.
You did not have a website then. Do you have one now?
Not really. I mean, if you Google my name, you get about 11 million hits, and there's several blogs that I do that are international, and my books can be gotten on Amazon.com. But no, I don't have a website. People keep telling me to do it, and maybe I will.
I love the cover of Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves?
Well,
a human hand shaking hands with a robot.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was perfect. It was just like, whoa, that's it.
And it's real.
Yeah.
My gosh. Well, let me ask you this, too. We talk about intelligent design. What is intelligent design, as far as you're concerned?
All right. That answer, it can be exceedingly long, but I can probably get it shorter. If you see a car, you think it's designed, and it had to be designed by someone intelligent. Look at a skyscraper, it was designed.
Sure.
Aircraft carrier, it's designed. So you inherently know that something is designed. When we get into biology and humans and things of that sort, sometimes political agendas and religious thinking get mixed in. And so, I'm a fellow with the Discovery Institute, and what we've been trying to do for a long time is to sell the idea, not sell, but convince people that the human being is designed also in an intelligent way, way beyond a car or a skyscraper, and that I had mentioned, and you gave me some Q&A things to fill out, that I was an ardent believer in Darwin at one time, for a long time. In fact, that's what I was taught in public school and college and even medical school. That was the way of thinking. And indeed, I thought along that line for a long time, and it made a lot of sense, and in fact, it still makes a lot of sense. I'll perhaps come back to that to explain what I'm meaning, but it makes a lot of sense, but it's not enough to explain us and our design. And so that's the whole point. We are so complicated. Sometimes I say to people, think of a skyscraper with books from top to bottom, shelves of books and more books and more books. That would be our DNA. It's in there. It's as complicated as that, and maybe more so, maybe more than one or two skyscrapers. We are programmed. There are blueprints. And we've gone beyond Darwin. Darwin made sense 150 years ago, a lot of sense, and some of it does still. Like, you know, if you breed horses, which he looked at, to be faster, you can make them faster, but you can't make them into another species. You can breed dogs to be a whole host of things. And we know there's well over 200 types of breeds that do variety things that are known for it, but you can't make them into something else, and you can't make a cat into a rat or vice versa. you can't change species. All you can do is alter the species itself. They can have more babies. They can have less babies. They can be more camouflaged.
You might give them three arms instead of two. Who knows, right?
Well, yeah, and that probably has happened, but usually two work better, or four, but not three. But maybe somewhere that's to be found. But there aren't. The other thing with Darwin is there's a lot of talk about trial and error. But we have nothing in the fossil record of error. There is practically nothing there. In fact, the fossil record, my second book along this line was called Billions of Missing Links. And I speak of all the things that are missing, all the steps that are missing. And so it's real easy to think of changing one species to another, changing a Chevy to a Ford or something along that line, or a sedan to a truck. But the steps, are, when you get down to the microscopic level and to the submicroscopic level, there are enormous steps, and so many steps, and it gets to be billions and billions of steps, and they're not accounted for. So as the years go by, there's more and more missing steps. And I'm not talking about the macro thing that you're looking at. It's the micro stuff, and it's what we know now. And what Darwin didn't know, and he had reason to think what he thought at the time, and there is something to be said for natural selection. There is something to be said a little bit for trial and error. Maybe mutations, but most mutations are damaging. And so most of the stuff he was saying made sense 150 years ago. It doesn't make sense anymore, but people hold on to this as if it were biblical in its own sense.
Absolutely. Were you ever a Darwinist, Jeffrey?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was very strongly. So I had felt strongly that Darwin was correct, and I'd argue with my wife, who was a Seventh-day Adventist.
She was right.
Well, I shouldn't argue with her.
No, don't.
Through the years, yes. But I didn't know that early on. Anyway, and I stumbled on a book called The Neck of the Giraffe. It was written by Francis Hitching. And it was written about 1980 or so. And he talked about how the neck of a giraffe has no predecessors. And it's not just the long neck, but it's the physiology that goes into it, like a giraffe has a reservoir at the base of its neck, at the base of its brain, so that when it's bending over to drink water and it's under attack, it can bring its head up and take off without passing out because it's got that blood supply up there. And there's, and same thing with the blood pressure. It's got a heart the size of a basketball. And a blood pressure on a giraffe is drastically higher than ours, and it's normal for them. And so there is no in-between animal. So then he went into, oh, the whale. You know, there is no fossil for the whale. There is no in-between species. There is no species with a blowhole on the side. You know, the whale's tail goes up and down, unlike a fish, which goes sideways.
Sideways, that's right.
Yeah, and there's no mammals in the sea that have tails that go, you know, sort of halfway or working its way around. So the whale in itself is almost worth a whole textbook. And so
that's,
it went on and on. I learned more and more. And the more I looked into it, the more I began to say, God, there's a problem here. And being a physician, I found it all very fascinating. And so my wife said, why don't you write a book? And ironically, I finished my book, and I said, now who am I going to sell this to? Now, I've had several novels that have done very well in the past, but I could sell those to New York without any problem. In fact, one was optioned for a movie twice. I thought
good,
I was on my
good for you.
Said, Michael Crichton, move over, but it didn't happen.
You're on the way, but
yeah,
it didn't happen.
So I didn't know who I could sell it to, and by coincidence, and I sometimes wonder if this is more than just a coincidence, I got a new patient in, and it says on the intake sheet, acquisition editor for Harvest House.
Ha, huh, how about that?
How about that? And I said, you know, would you be interested in this? I mean, I hate to impose. He says, yeah, actually, I'm one of two editors in this country who would be very interested in this. And so he took it back to his board, or whatever they're called, and voted 6 out of 6 to go for it, and we're off to the races, and the next thing he wanted was a second book. I've long since separated from them, not for any good or bad reason. It's just they've gotten more into more selective titles because of the market competition.
And it's so huge. Can you mix, Jeffrey, Darwinism and intelligent design together?
I think so.
So it works in tandem.
Actually, I'm talking about that in the book that I'm writing now. But yeah, I think you can. But I don't think you can change species with it, as I mentioned just a speck ago. If one is a theist, believer in God, one could say you could have guided evolution or theistic evolution in that where the gaps are, did God step in and fix those gaps, make all those steps workable, make them all show up at the same time.
Well, how would nature be? This is where I look at it with intelligent design, which I believe is extremely complex. And there are no coincidences in my book. Things happen for a reason.
I agree.
What are the odds of nature creating, let's use just the human being for lack of a species, an object with a body with two arms to do things, two legs to move around, a nose to smell, two eyes to see, two ears to hear, a mouth to eat and talk? Who would think of that? Accidentally. It doesn't happen by nature.
I agree. And that's the gist of all three of my books. The third book, which we'll get to, I'm sure, but it has another important point, too. But, yeah, I don't see how this could come about accidentally. Suppose, for instance, getting back to the blueprints, take like the Dead Sea Scrolls. When they were found, did anybody assume they came about by accident? Or did somebody assume, somebody's assume, these were written by somebody?
The discovery was by accident.
No, nothing was accident. It was intelligence behind it. Well,
behind the discovery, you think?
No, behind the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The finding by the little boy was by accident.
Yeah, but the discussion of who wrote these, there was never a discussion that they happened by accident, that they were written by people a long time ago, with or without God, debating and that type of thing. But what I'm getting at is we have Francis Collins, who's a major author from the Genome Project, The Language of God, that was the title of his book. And our blueprints, I think, are the language of God. We have such complicated blueprints. We have 6 million what they call nucleotide bases. We have anywhere from 20,000 to 100,000 genes, and it depends on how you want to count them and how they interact. And all this happened almost suddenly on its own, and these are blueprints for us, our human being. When we start out as one cell fertilized by another, we get half the blueprints from dad and half the blueprints from mom, and then we're off to the races. And this little phenomenon, this little cell, makes 75 trillion cells, and all of them have the blueprints, but they selectively use parts of the blueprints. So they know a neurological cell knows what parts of the blueprints it's supposed to use. The cells that make thyroid hormone know what part of the blueprint they're supposed to use. And they all use a little bit of the same, building the cell wall and all the machinations that go into a cell. In fact, there are movies on, if you were able to step inside a cell, it was grossly, enlarged to the size of a huge building or something. It'd be a monstrous factory, what's going on. All run by blueprints in the center, command center, or the nucleus. How this stuff came about by accident is beyond me, and it's what I argue, what I debate. It's interesting. When I was in Israel, I had an awful lot of agreement and listening, and then I was in Spain, I had a lot of university students arguing with me and
supporting Darwin?
Supporting Darwin or calling me a religious fanatic, which I never was, and still not.
Well, then now you bring up something I wanted to ask you. We've got some time before the break here, and that is being religious. It's easy for people, when we talk about intelligent design, to simply say, God did this. But I want more answers than that.
When we talk about this as the fellows with Discovery Institute, the door is open as to what intelligence you want to bring in.
How did it come about?
Yeah, and how did that come about? But I mean, some people talk about panspermia, you know, where we came from aliens of some sort. But who made them?
Who made them? Exactly.
Yeah, who made them, and then who made them beyond that? But, you know, it's still beyond explanation how all this came about. And I believe, personally, God did it. It took me a long time to come around to saying that and to thinking that. In fact, there was a period in my life where I thought people who said that were, well, not smart or...
Zealots.
Or fooled or zealots, yeah. And I'm not a zealot, and I'm a spiritual person more than a religious person.
You're a man of science, for crying out loud.
I believe so. And the time has come to accept this as science. In fact, until a couple hundred years ago, science and religion were the same. They were the same. And all of a sudden, we got this split around Darwin's time or a little thereafter. And one could argue, and it'd take lots of hours to discuss, why that came about. But it came about. And so we've been separated, religion and science. And you can't seem to believe both. But my next book that I'm working on, I'm trying to bring them back together. There's been attempts to do that in the past. And so I'm following on the heels of good people, and I'll give it a shot, too. But I think there's something to be said for theistic guided evolution.
Sure. Now, give me your definition of God, though.
Well, just not having a definition is God, I suppose. Everywhere, nowhere, everything, in a way, nothing. There is no definition per se. And I think I'd be foolish if I came up with one.
Was Darwin a believer in God?
You know, that's interesting. I think he might have been at one time, but he drifted away from it. And the story goes that he had a daughter. I think it was a daughter, not a son.
Something happened?
Yeah, she died at age 10 or 11. And he became, the story is, and I don't know if it's accurate, but I've read it. It became rather bitter. And how could God do this if there really was a God?
And I can understand how he would feel.
Yeah, a lot of people
do. We all
would. When bad things happen.
Yeah.
And so...
Yet there are miracles that happen. They happen, too.
Oh, I've had a few in my day. Not necessarily miracles, but incredible coincidences. And that was one of them that I told you about, the editor. Another one was... I heard of a group called Physicians and Surgeons for Scientific Integrity, PSSI, in Florida, and I tracked down their phone number through a lot of effort, and I called finally this guy named Rich Akins, and he said, "I don't believe this. I literally have your book in my hand."
And I was, synchronicity, my friend.
I was trying to call you because we want to go to Spain, and we want to ask you if you would, you know, be a guest in your family. And he says, "I have your book in my hand." You know, yeah, synchronicity. So I have some others that I think are just way beyond that, which might take too long to describe, but yeah, there's been some incredible coincidences. And one in particular, where I came back to a hotel room and said to my wife, if I didn't believe before, I do now, and maybe...
Yeah, I mean, these things...
I can tell you.
These things happen.
They do. But intelligent design, just the blueprints are too hard to happen on their own, and they're too hard to happen slowly. You know, you can't add information to DNA, not on its own. It can't do that. And the monkey's DNA is significant. It's similar to ours because they have two legs and two arms, and they have a face that's similar to ours, and they do a lot of things that are similar to us. So they have 95% similarity. But 95% of 6 billion nucleotides leaves a lot of nucleotides that aren't similar. And then there's other issues that go into how they interact. And in fact, a whole chapter in What Darwin Didn't Know talks about how we're different than monkeys and how many...
Hold on for a second, Jeffrey. We're at a break. We'll come back and talk more. Plus, I want to ask you about your title, Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Jeffrey Simmons, as we talk about one of his latest works, Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? You've written so many books, Jeffrey, I can't keep track of it. What is the latest? Is it this one?
Yeah, it is this one. I'm working on something, but it'll be a couple of years probably in the doing. Yeah, this is a nagging kind of pattern that I kept seeing and thinking about when I was writing the other two. And I began to wonder if we haven't, you know, there's a lot of reasons or purposes to life, and depending on who you are and what your religious outlook is or a variety of other issues, what's the purpose of life? And, of course, in there is glorify God, serve God, teach God, or Sister Teresa, help the poor, or help the lame, or help the ill, or, you know, to make money, or if you're family-oriented, you know, to raise a family. There's a lot of purposes, and maybe all of them, or you can mix and match. But is it possible that one of the purposes is to recreate ourselves? And if one starts looking at this, this pattern, it, to me, jumps off the page. And I had to put it down, and it, putting it down turned into a book. And for instance, take, say, cave drawings and move that through history to paintings and to sculptures and to mannequins, to robots, and into humanoids. There's one pattern. But if you also take, say, lightning striking sand and making glass, and then picking up glass that magnifies things, and then making glasses, and making binoculars, and making telescopes, and making video, and making cameras, and all of a sudden you have robotic eyes. So we're another aspect of recreating ourselves. We're making animals that, not animals, but robots that walk a variety of legs and arms and that sort, but we've come around to pretty much making one with arms, two arms, and two legs. And that seems to be a good pattern to follow. We're making, take hearing. I mean, it used to be your hand behind your ear to hear, and then there was this trumpet, and then there was the hearing aid, and now the cochlear implant, you know. And so we have robotic hearing. We have robotic vision.
And now they want to put chips in our brains.
They do. And the computer is sort of the abacus from the Babbage computer and the sliding rule, and we went to a computer, and we're going to have a robot with a brain, and so we're making everything like a person in very much the same way, and it's looking more and more like a person. In fact, they have humanoids greeting people, shoppers in Japan, that speak 27 languages, and they look and kind of talk like people. China has robots who actually give the news, or robotic-type figures
who give the news. Those are called humans that they have played with their brains.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe that's it.
The Communist Party today did something wonderful.
Well, it could be. But if you look at these patterns, and my book is 300 pages worth of these patterns that, and mimicking things, and it talks about other things along the way, and it talks about intelligent design. But why are we doing this? It's not just that we're doing it, but why are we doing this? And one might say, this is, well, whoever, first of all, warfare, and whoever controls the planet, and warfare is one of them, and robots surely is where we are going to fight with. Whoever controls space probably controls Earth. And so we are going to have robotic-type figures, and we already had half a humanoid on the International Space Station. We are going to, if we make it to Mars, we're going to have robotic figures doing the building for us.
Would we be the gods to the robots?
Well, you know, it's a good question, and we could program that. But you know, if we're going to go beyond Mars, which I don't think, given the information we have now, medically or human-wise, we can go beyond. Jupiter is 4.5-5 times further, and beyond that, you can't put a person into suspended animation, I think, on Earth for 5 years to see if it works. Who on Earth is going to volunteer for that? We don't think we can reproduce, have babies on the way to Andromeda strain because all the cosmic particles, they already caused something called space brain in some of our astronauts. So I don't think people are going to be able to make it to outer space, especially beyond our solar system, if not halfway out. And based on at least the technology that we have now, and that is a given. I mean, we don't know because go back 100 years, they didn't think about flying machines, and now, you know, we're doing more than that. But given our technology, people can't make it. So we're going to have robots take us out there. And not only that, but do we want, is a picture worth 1,000 words? Suppose we run into an extraterrestrial. Do we want them to think that we look like, you know, caterpillars or millipedes with 1,000 legs, or we want them to know, you know, kind of what we look like?
And will they look like us?
Yeah, and have them look like us. And but also warfare, drudgery, robots doing drudgery, robots entertaining children, robots keeping old folks company. They have to look like people. The police, we have police in Singapore that are robots that are, they don't look like people yet, but they probably will. And so it's coming. And so we're designing robots to look like us. I think it's so pathetically obvious that I had to write a book about it. And whoever succeeds in this will be probably the most successful civilization and controller of everybody else on Earth.
Look what we've done, though, with just medicine and you as a doctor. I mean, here's Dick Cheney running around with a new heart, has kept him alive. He should have been dead a long time ago. Medicine, modern medicine, continues to do amazing things surgically and things like that.
You know, in a way, that's a flip side of what I'm talking about, too.
Yeah.
Because we have people now with artificial pancreases. We have people with artificial heart parts like valves. We have people...
Pig valves and things like that we
use. But even artificial valves.
Oh, sure.
Valves, we have people with, you know, have you ever seen the series, the Star Trek series with the Borgs?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're having people kind of go down that line. And if we look at prosthetics on legs and arms, they have come a long way. If you, you know, you and I might remember, I certainly do, the $6 million man from way, way back with Steve Austin, who was played by Lee Majors. And he had an eye that could see, instead of 20/20, he could see 20 and 1, you know.
20 minus or something. Yeah.
He could run as fast as cars. He could jump higher than anybody. He had a poison dart that came out of one of his fingers, you know. Well, nowadays that would be a laser of sorts. But so we are making people into Borgs, and we're making robots into people.
Let's get back to God.
You know,
do we find him ever?
Well, I don't think, you know, I think it's like a treasure chest. If you had somebody, suppose you were camping or doing something on the Carolina coast, and your kids came back with an old, old-looking chest with treasure in it, would that say to you that there were pirates at some point, or something like that?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, so can you deduce from blueprints and all, birth, childbirth is a big one, can you deduce that there is a God out there? And I'll tell you my story, and maybe the next time around when we have time, but can you deduce that there is a God behind this, especially the blueprints? I mean, I just can't fathom they came about anywhere else. And so I think of that sort of as a treasure chest. But I use, when I give my talk sometimes, I start off with childbirth, and I talk about all the things that go on, including the heart starts at the fourth week, and the sex is pretty much decided in the sixth week, and on, all the development. But I often jump to birth itself. And there is a bunch of coincidences that have to happen right. You can't have this trial and error Darwin style. The baby's coming down the birth canal, and if it gets stuck, it doesn't make it, it dies. If it comes out and it doesn't take a breath fast enough, this is about 3 or 4 minutes, if it didn't take a breath fast enough, it dies. It's got to come through and breathe at the right time. Plus, there's a valve in one of the arteries that diverts the blood away from the lungs while it's in the uterus. And as soon as it's born, That changes, so the blood now goes to the lungs, so oxygen can go into the blood. That has to change at the time of birth. And so there's so many factors. You know, the baby, when it's ready, it sends signals to mom, and mom says, okay, we're ready, sends signals back down, and everything starts to happen. I consider it a miracle. And you know, ever since I started thinking along this line, almost everything I see in nature, to me, seems like a miracle.
The fact that you've gone from a Darwinist to a creationist, what do your friends say to you?
What's wrong with you?
Really?
Some do. I mean, it's about time. I mean, it depends on. I have a cross-section of friends who I have a very good friend who's a pastor who, you know, likes to hear what I have to say, and I have friends who I went to medical school with who are still locked into Darwin and think maybe I've gone off the deep end. It's very, very hard to bridge the chasm that exists out there. It's almost like in line with everything political right now as well. You're either on one side or the other, and I see that in my talks as well. And it's difficult. So yeah, I think people for the most part will give me a chance to say, and not uncommonly we'll get to a point where I'll just say, can we agree to disagree, and let's just talk. And instead of fight or argue, because that's what people tend to do these days, just agree to disagree and discuss it. And I'm hoping to bridge some of that with the next book, but it's not easy.
What are the schools teaching, Dr. Simmons, about evolution and creationism?
Yeah, I'm fairly removed from the schools, but I certainly read about it. And most of public schools are not teaching creation.
They feel like they can't.
They can't. They're not allowed to. And lots of the teachers think it's baloney. You know, I think, and a lot of the fellows at Discovery Institute feel this should be taught as an option, that kids should hear the other side. They should hear what are the problems with Darwin's theories and make up your own mind. But it's not allowed in school, and people who try to teach it in school, most schools, and it's been fought in court a number of times around the country, and it's hard to get in there. And so the kids are graduating from college and high school for sure, but college thinking Darwin was right, and everybody, you know, all my teachers believed it, all my professors believed it, so it must be right. And I lived that dream, too. I mean, it had to be right. It had to be right. And because all these smart people thought it was right. Well, all these smart people, I think, are locked into one lane. And then there's a lot of people who've built their whole professional life saying that God doesn't exist or Darwin's right. And so it's hard for them to recant at this point.
Could we be wrong about creationism, both of us?
Sure. But I don't know what the option would be. There's got to be something that's intelligent that did this.
There's no way this would happen by accident or random. There's just no way.
I don't think so. Billions and billions of the odds are just beyond calculation. I don't see how. I met Carl Sagan many, many years ago. He came and talked in my town, and I went to the greetings afterwards and talked to him for a little while. And I said, you know, the complexity of stuff. How do you explain that? He says, oh, just there's billions of years, you know, it can happen. Well, I don't think so, because there's more than billions of changes. If one actually calculates out the changes, they almost have to happen every second for all the billions of years that we're around, or happen simultaneously. And everything in the body has to happen in the right place, in the right way, at the right time. It's just unbelievable how it happens, and on a microscopic level, it's incredible. I sometimes point to the clotting system. I mean, not only do we have several pathways that have to meet, but every step in each pathway has to happen in the right order, and then to cause clotting, but the clotting has to be in the right place. You can't clot off the whole body, so there's another mechanism that keeps that from happening, and then there's a mechanism that stops it all and just causes the wound to heal. I mean, if we didn't have clotting, we'd bleed to death with the smallest cut. There's a lot of another thing I argue, too, is foresight. We have a lot of foresight, sort of a what if, and the COVID virus is not a bad thing to point to. What if a virus comes along? You've never seen this virus before by your body. You've never seen a virus like it before in your body. You have a what if, a foresight built in. I put a capital on the foresight, on the F, to notice it, to capture it, to break it down, to analyze it, and to make antibodies to it.
And to get rid of it.
And get rid of it, yeah. So you have, and we have that foresight, a lot of what ifs in our body to deal with a whole host of things. I mean, a lot of cells turn into cancer in our body, and our body gets rid of them, and why that later life doesn't happen, we don't know entirely, but maybe the system ages. But there's a lot of foresight. There's a lot of engineering. You know, it's not just that your gut absorbs food. It has to move through at a very select speed. It has to have the right enzymes, find the right food, and break it down and take it to the right place.
Well, let's take some phone calls with you, Jeffrey, when we come back in just a moment as we talk about intelligent design. Do you believe it or not? His book is called Are We Here to Recreate Ourselves? Doesn't have a website, so don't have to worry about that. But you can read his information at coasttocoastam.com.